Alternative investments have long been perceived as complex and exclusive tools reserved for accredited investors and high net worth individuals. Yet, they offer a powerful opportunity for diversification, wealth creation, and financial resilience. In recent years, a wave of fintech innovation has disrupted the space, making alternative investments more accessible to the retail investors. Whether you are here to understand the alternative investment landscape, or you work at a financial institution that is exploring ways to offer these opportunities to their clients, this episode is packed with valuable insights for you. Welcome to Fathom FinTech Podcast, where we explore the future of financial services. I'm your host, Chief Patti, and today we are diving into the world of alternative investments. I'm beyond excited to welcome Khushbu Jha, CEO and founder of Buy Properly, a company that is transforming the alternative investment space with AI-powered online market platform for fractional real estate and alternative investments across Canada and US. Khushbu is not only a brilliant entrepreneur, but also a longtime friend, and her passion for innovation and wealth building is truly inspiring. I can't wait to dive into her insights on making the alternative investments more accessible, the role of AI in investing, and also what the future holds in this space. Welcome to the show, Khushbu. So great to have you. And I feel like it's long time due now that we had to do this. Last time we talked about Buy Properly at our podcast was probably 3 or 4 years ago. So a lot of major milestones, a lot of team growth, and other, you know, amazing launches that you've had. So I thought it's a good time for us to have you here back and share some amazing things you have been up to and your team has been up to. You just announced a new launch, which I'm going to save it for later so you can make the big reveal there. But also, you know, we do want to talk about alternative investments. That's something that has been, you know, we have been talking about in some of our other content and reports that we produce. And I thought, you know, no better person than Khushbu to help us and our audience get more insights on alternative investment and that space as well. But with that, Khushbu, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me, Jeet. It's been a pleasure knowing you and talking to you in the past. And I'm very excited about today's show.
That's wonderful. And I'm going to talk, like, me and Khushbu actually are great friends, and we've become like a great way to, you know, two female entrepreneurs who can share each other's journey and help each other out over the years. And it's been absolutely a pleasure to, you know, be engaged with Khushbu in that way. But Khushbu, before we start talking about alternative investments and, you know, all the other great things, I feel like we've never talked about your journey and your background, which I know is amazing. So I want to highlight that, and I want our audience to know about that. So tell us a little bit about your background, how, you know, I know your journey started back in India, and you've lived in, I can't even count how many countries, and all the amazing roles and career you've had before you began your entrepreneurship journey. So let's share a little bit of that with us.
Sure. So Jeet, as you know, I was born in India. I grew up in India. I did my undergrad in engineering at a college called Indian Institute of Technology, IIT Kharagpur. Pretty linear path till that time. After my engineering, I actually joined strategy consulting. I worked with Accenture. I was based out of Delhi, and it was a good time to be a strategy consultant in India, which was like one of the fast growing BRIC countries, and got to do a whole bunch of projects, crazy expansion, crazy scaling, mergers and acquisitions. It was a good time with very interesting projects, even though we also got to see the 2008 fallout and all of those implications. I think India was less impacted than some of the other parts of the world, especially North America. And so we continue to see a lot of growth, national, international. And after that, I decided to do my MBA from US. I was very numbers and math and financial model kind of a person, so it seemed like an obvious path to choose a finance school and major in finance, which is what I did. So I went to Wharton, majored in finance, interned with private equity firms, and interned on Wall Street, and did all of that. And I think almost on a whim, I ended up at Amazon. So Amazon was on campus, and as is true for any MBA student, they were providing some free food, so I showed up. Right. And so, but then their pitch was, what would you like to do long term? That, well, maybe start my own company. And they said, okay, Amazon, if you join, can give you a chance to launch a new business from scratch or run a very large business from day one. I mean, you shouldn't fall for company pitches like that, but I did. I joined them and I stayed with them for close to 5.5, 6 years. I started in the US. I actually did launch businesses for them. So I launched the first business in the US. It was a used electronics product. And true to Amazon style, there was no resources. So it's figuring out how you work with absolutely close to zero resources or one resource, which was just me, and building an entire business, growing that business, getting that up to speed. Building everything from scratch. I took that business to Germany, France, Spain, once it was done in US. It gave me a lot of experience in building and scaling a business across geographies also, dealing with regulations, everything. Then I stayed on in UK. I checked off another box as part of the electronics team. So I was managing a large $500 million P&L, which has an absolutely different range of problems. You're talking more 80-20, you're talking prioritization, you're fighting for every basis point of profit, and every percentage of growth is a big deal. It's a different environment and a different set of challenges that you are striving for. Then I moved to Canada and launched another business with Amazon, just hazardous materials. So I did get to do a lot of technology and business building and supply chain building, dealing with regulations and compliance, because I launched a hazardous materials product, which was compliance all over. It was a global launch. Made me read regulations and compliance in all countries in Europe, North America, and Japan. That's a lot of countries to get myself educated on. But it also made me realize how, when you're working with the regulations, there's the letter of the law and there's the spirit of the law. And it's important to understand the spirit of the law and follow it, because that's meant to protect the end user, the end customer. And as long as you're doing things in the spirit of the law, you should be okay. So basic first principle thinking should get you far. And a lot of that spilled into BuyProperly even when we were building it. But moving from Amazon, I was looking for investing. I had a whole bunch of Amazon stocks, which are great stocks to have. But I wanted to diversify outside of stock market. Like at some point, I felt 70-80% of my entire net worth wealth was in stock market, which if you studied finance, that's not the right way to have your investment portfolio. And there's no mechanism for me to say, what if I want to invest in private credit and private equity and venture capital? Nobody did my check. I was like, why doesn't anybody take my check? I'm here writing checks and you don't want it. It's too small, too difficult, too many restrictions. And that's what kind of got me started on this journey to say, why are there so many restrictions? Why doesn't anybody want my check? Yes, it's not 50 million, but it's 50K or 100K. And in my mind, that was a very large check. And why would you say no? I wasn't giving them 500. I was talking about 50, 100K. But there was no mechanism for a fund to take my money. And they thought it was too risky. And that's what kind of evolved into BuyProperly, just digging up the regulatory challenges, the operational challenges of making it work, all of the cost of serving a small investor. And from a very Amazon mindset, it was like, okay, maybe the value chain doesn't work. And so we change it through automation and technology and make the marginal cost of managing a small investor lower and more efficient. And that's what built BuyProperly.
Wow. I just I hope the audience can also appreciate like the way you describe your journey. Obviously, I went to IIT Kharagpur and then the ultimate decision was to do finance. So I went to Wharton and then I went to to do these great things, high level roles at Amazon, and then finding my proper like we can only imagine how much hard work, Khushbu, that went into each of those milestones. Like even your educational journey, that's exceptional. Like for people who in North America might not know about IITs, exceptionally competitive exams, very, very tough to get into. And then of course, I'm sure Wharton was equally competitive to get into as well. That just shows, the hard work, the courage and the smartness, the intelligence, and that thing in you which you want to excel at whatever you do, and you're doing it with BI properly now as well. But that's very interesting journey. So it was your own investment hurdle in a way, which led you to find this platform and open alternative investment options for other retail consumers. This is really, really amazing. So tell us how, and then you found BUY Properly in 2019. And obviously in US, we have had some platforms like Fundrise and Realty Mogul and others who were a few years ago too, they were providing alternative investment, fractional investment in real estate properties and so forth. But for Canada, I feel like you were the one, sort of the first one in the country to launch that. So tell us about that. What were the challenges here that you faced, and how has that evolved now that you're established? And I know BUY Properly operates in Canada and US both. But what was that journey like?
Absolutely. So before I started, it's not like I jumped in only with passion. It's like, hey, I have a problem, let's go build a company. I did my background research on the regulations, and seemed like the regulations would allow for it. They had changed fairly recently between like 16, 17, 18, 19. They had evolved to support an initiative like what we were building. But even though the regulations had changed, the systems hadn't changed, and it was still difficult. And governance was, I think, on everybody's mind. And people were very afraid of unintentional non-compliance. And the risk of unintentional non-compliance or non-compliance was so high that people wouldn't do it. So the first thing I did was obviously validate my understanding with experts. So we reached out to a whole bunch of lawyers. And everybody came back and said, no, it can't be done. Like, what do you mean? What about this paragraph and this section on the Securities Commission website? It seems like it can be done. Like, no, it can't be done. Sorry. And that was the first response from people. And so I had to like go arm myself with all of the information and find the right people who understood the regulations and said, yes, it can be done. It's hard, it's difficult, and it hasn't been done before, but it can be done. And by the time I found those lawyers, I was pretty confident it can be done. Like, I already know it can be done because I've spent so much time trying to understand the space. And we also did research on whether is it only my problem or are there more people in my bucket? And so we went to a few conferences and we showed and presented our ideas and asked people if they are interested. And like, we had about 1,500, 2,000 people sign up before with just a GoDaddy website, like before we even embarked on this journey. So we knew we could do this and we could make it happen. And that's kind of how we just said, okay, I think we are ready to start. But being a pioneer is a great thing. It got us a lot of awards, and we are very thankful to the industry and the various forums in the industry to help spread word about us through those awards, because we clearly had no marketing budget. But those awards were a great recognition that we were trying to do something new, different, and we were succeeding at doing it. But it also hard because there was a whole component of educating the potential, the user, the investor, the partners, like even the funds, like, who are you? Are you backed by TD Bank? We would get questions like that, like, no, we're not backed by TD Bank. And no, we're not running away with your money because this is our process which keeps it safe. And so
Right.
It was a lot of education for all of the players in the ecosystem, including the customers, which was one of the reasons why we had started with real estate investing. Like, okay, less education. But being a pioneer gave us some flexibility. So there wasn't a standard. People weren't stuck in a software or a certain way of doing it, which means we could define that way of doing it. We could define good user experience. So we had that freedom. But then the onus was on us to educate, and we would do these webinars. What is alternative? What is this asset class? How do I ensure you don't run away with my money? How do I ensure this actually is going to work? And so there's a lot of, and people weren't used to investing in real estate or private credit online. That wasn't a thing. You did by going to a house with a broker, you found a mortgage, and that's what you did. So this
Absolutely,
is a net new thing. So there's a lot of education and understanding their concerns and going back and saying, how do we address this and how do we address this to give the ecosystem and the customers comfort.
Which actually gets me to my next question, Khushbu, because there's still, I feel, a lot of people out there who might be, interested in alternative investments and who would hear a word like, fractional investing in real estate or, private credit or private equity, but wouldn't really understand the whole concept of it. Can you take some time, a couple of minutes, just to, for a layman's world, lay it out clear and simple, what it is that alternative investments are, what are the different categories that exist within this portfolio of, or category of investments?
Yeah, absolutely. So private alternatives is, well, it's alternatives because it's an alternative to stocks and bonds. Therefore, the term alternative. It's not stocks and it's not a bond and it's not a cash. So if it's not in these buckets of investing and it's not gold. So it's like this is something other than that. And it's private because it's not on the stock market. So you cannot go to TSX or a NASDAQ and go buy this product. So that's why it's a private market. And well, you have, so if we take the example of real estate, for example, you have things like REITs and you have ETFs and you have some mainstream stock exchange products which are a derivative of this. But the actual deals and the actual investments are happening in the private space. So that's this. And the big buckets in this category would be real estate, which is not necessarily the biggest category, but the one that has that's most talked about. Everybody loves real estate and has an opinion. Data backed or not is a different question, but they do have an opinion about real estate. So real estate, which is residential and commercial, the office, storage, things like hospitals, hotels, they're all real estate, not just houses. And that's residential and commercial. So that's one bucket. Private credit is another. And private credit would be when you are investing in credit, which is basically debt, but privately. So effectively, you are giving money to somebody as a loan. You know, and you are investing into another private company or product. So it could be a mortgage fund, or it could be a company taking out a loan to grow their business privately. You didn't take it through the bank. You got it directly. That's private credit. Private equity is you're investing in a company. Venture capital is also you're investing in a company, but very early stage. And then you have hedge funds, which employ a whole bunch of combination strategies to make the most of your wealth and help you grow wealth. And it's very important to understand that when you are thinking of managing your money, and you're not looking for a lottery of how I double my money overnight. If you're just looking to grow your wealth, you want it to grow sustainably, not be up today and down tomorrow, because you want to plan your future, your kids' futures, your family's futures, your retirement linked to your wealth. And so you want it to be an all-weather portfolio, which means you don't want the volatility of just one asset class. So imagine for me, a large chunk of my wealth was all Amazon stocks. It's great if they're doing up, but what if it tanked? I'd be wiped out. So it was important that Not only do I have Amazon stocks, but other asset classes that are not correlated to Amazon. So when this goes down, not everything goes down. There's something else that goes up. And on an average, I continue to grow my wealth total. So if I had 100 bucks, it's not that 100 bucks becomes 200 or zero. It's like the 100 bucks will become 120 or 130 because 50 of it goes up and 50 of it went down. Or 30 went up, 30 stayed constant and 30 went down. On an average, I made 15 or 20, which is fine on the long term. And that's what private alternatives do, lets you build a very diversified all-weather portfolio.
Right. So it kind of like strengthens your long-term wealth management strategy in a way, as you're kind of diversifying for sure, but also diversifying in an area which is not as volatile as, let's say, the stock market or some of the other options out there. And what can people buy through Buy Properly, and what's the process? Is it how easy basically it is to get started in alternative investment space?
Well, it was modeled on Amazon. So pretty much you choose your investor, you click the invest button, you put the amount and you check out and the shares will appear in your database and you'll get the documents. You sign the legal in the process. So end to
Right.
end, less than 5 minutes, you can make the investment. So that process is simple. Behind the scenes, obviously, we have a whole bunch of things going on. We are making sure we have your information. We're running the KYC, the AML, the PEP, all the checks that financial services need to do, the photo ID. We are following all of those guidelines. It's just happening real time in the flow.
And you make it appear easy and simple for the user. And what is the minimum amount, Kushbu, that people need to get started on your platform?
So for a first-time visa user, the minimum is 500. For repeat users, we typically have a minimum of 2,500.
I see, I see. And can you just explain or acknowledge it here that how cool that is, because these sort of investment options were not available for a retail investor, and they were only available for high net worth individuals. And what kind of minimums, that situation had for the high net worth individuals?
Yeah, so if you look at the large institutions, they've been investing in private alternatives forever. So the best known and the best performing in the world is considered Yale Endowment. So Yale Endowment, Penn Endowment, which is my school, the Harvard Endowment, they all have almost 50% of their investments in alternatives. And so some of the best and the longest stretch of well-performing funds and investors have had this in their portfolio forever. So if you were to go back and analyze, it's like, oh God, I was missing out on this one. And so that's kind of why it is so important to make sure that it is showing up in your portfolio also. But the funds don't want your money because then they have to answer your questions, send you the documents, make sure you're updated, answer your whims and fancies. What if you want liquidity tomorrow? Which Yale Foundation can wait forever. Sure, you can take 10 years, they don't mind. But what if your situation changes, you lose your job, and now you need the money? And so they have to make sure they only take as much as you won't need it tomorrow, or in 2 years, or in 5 years. And so, with all of those things, the minimums used to be very, very high. So big funds obviously only take money from very, very big endowments and pension funds, etc. But even on smaller funds, and without naming, there's a mortgage corp we provide our services to. And it's a mortgage investment corp. Their total AUM right now is 500 and forever 500 million. And forever, they've only been taking money from about less than 100 investors. These are large investors and finance, large family offices and institutions. And that's it. For the last 20, 25 years, this is their crowd. They don't go beyond it. It doesn't matter if you have extra money. They don't want to deal with you because they will have to do a lot of paperwork, get you, understand you. It's a lot of work for a smaller check. So the minimum would be, even for a smaller fund, the minimum would be in the range of $250,000.
Right. Wow.
And but then here's the catch.
That's
Not
why.
only is the
Yeah.
minimum high, they will take that minimum from you if you also have 5 million for later. It's a
Right. That's
combination.
what the reason I wanted to, sorry, Gush, but wanted to highlight that because that's, I think, the huge thing that your platform has done, like open a whole new era of investments for retail investors, right? And since we're talking about why the big funds don't allow retail investors, I think there are a certain degree of efficiencies that you have cracked, which enables you to still keep the cost manageable and offer it to the retail investors with a minimum of 500, right? Talk a little bit about that because we were talking about this earlier, right? How you started using AI early on in the journey, which has created a certain degree of efficiencies in your process, but also you're starting to see the evolution of the use case of AI within your platform itself. Talk a little bit about that to our audience and how you think that's going to evolve further because I feel we are standing at an inflex point when it comes to use cases of AI and we have new technologies and new additions coming to it every single day almost. What according to you would be the natural evolution from here as well.
Yeah, so you talked about regulations. I mean, from day one, we knew that compliance is super important in this space. We are dealing with people's hard-earned money. So you cannot go wrong, right? And so you have to do every bit. But how do you make sure you do that when you don't have all of the resources to throw at the smartest, best people to get this done? And the industry in general hires the best of the best in every bucket. Right? Whether you're lawyers, the accountants, the analysts, they're the best and the smartest that they can find in a country. And then those are the people who will end up in a private equity or a VC fund. That's pretty much the norm. They are the smartest people in that age group in that time. And you're competing with that. But coming from a very tech mindset, the assumption was that you will figure out a creative, innovative way of making sure you actually abide by everything compliance while not increasing the cost. It's like very Amazon-like mindset. It's like you have to think about the value chain differently. Like, how do you ensure that you are always compliant? And we have always been compliant. We've got great legal advisors in Fasken. Shout out to them to keep us always on our toes. But it was important to work with them collaboratively to say, hey, we can't afford this or have so much expensive lawyers. So we make sure we do this. And so changing the value chain bit by bit meant we are automating pieces bit by bit. AI is the multiplier. I used to work at Alexa. I've spent so much time in Amazon across my businesses launching AI. I knew AI is not a latch-on plug-in. You just do something and turbocharge. That's not how it works. It has to be integral to the strategy. And so we were thinking about leveraging AI for multiplier effect or a scaling effect from day one. So we were doing instrumentation to make sure we captured the right data in the right format, with the right consent, with the right policies from day one, with the assumption that 5 years down the line, we will, when we need to scale up, and when the number of investors grows from 1,500 to 30,000 and 40,000, then we'll be able to leverage these tools to turbocharge it without increasing our costs. And so based on that, we always had an AI roadmap and strategy. It's not that we had a whole bunch of products from day one, but we were thinking about it. We were thinking about the data, the instrumentation, the usages, all of that stuff. And I think that's an important thing, and you will start seeing more of that. But for a lot of people, and we encounter this sometimes in the industry, we use AI for due diligence, for all the expensive stuff, for fraud detection, for data inconsistencies when something just doesn't seem right, for doing all kinds of compliance checks and balances, which normally an expert human will do. But we've learned with expert humans some, and we've trained some on data. So some expert and some data. But now with a whole bunch of AI words suddenly being very in the face, I think with ChatGPT, people are saying, oh no, I can use it. I don't need to be a data scientist. I think previously people thought AI was something that people did or data scientists did and did in organizations like an Alexa or a Google, like an Amazon or a Google. And that's where AI sits. But with ChatGPT, people are like, I don't need to know anything. I just type ChatGPT and it does the work, and that's AI. So suddenly it's like, what is going on? We can use it. The truth is, most of the tech companies, including us, have always been using it as a multiplier of
Right,
things. Have
right.
always been using it to scale up without scaling up costs. And what we will see going forward, now that it's so front and center, is more organizations thinking like us and the Amazon and the Googles, where AI is part of your core business strategy. It's part of your core thinking. It's part of your business model. It's not a latch on, add on that you get from a vendor and then that's it. No, it's integral to how you think you will scale. Forces you to say, in 5 years, 10 years, I will have this need and potentially a tool which you can't imagine now, but will exist. You assume it will exist then. And plan for it today. So you have the data quality, the resources, the instrumentation in place, and be the readiness in place. Because a lot of times we've seen with changes in technology, the adoption is the biggest one. That's the biggest hurdle. It's like the change is the biggest hurdle, more than the utility. And when you build this into your strategy, you will see this as part of your business model. Like we talk about multi-agent models now quite a bit. Not very cutting edge, but it isn't about replacing a person. It's saying, can an entire process run autonomously without human intervention or just with human oversight? And what does that mean as a business in scaling, in revenues, in profitability? So those are the things that I think we'll see happening.
And I love how you're thinking about future, Kushbu, because I feel like in some ways, it's happening faster, and like the vision that you've portrayed, I feel that it'll happen faster than we think, and the future is here, kind of thing. But you know what? That brings me to your new product launch, Ashta. Let's talk about that. So you've already built a great business model and a great platform with Buy Properly. And now this new product launch will help enable others to get into the space and offer alternative investments to their investor clients. Talk to us about that, and what's the plan behind that? Because we saw the launch announcement on LinkedIn, but really want to hear from you. What's the big plan behind that?
So our mission and vision is to enable retail investors and more people to build wealth. And this is kind of an extension of that vision. If all we want is everybody to be able to grow their wealth through diversified portfolios and whatever is required, I mean, for most investors, and even if you ask me, if you ask me what do I want in terms of my wealth, I would just say, just make me money. Just make my money grow. Call it stocks, call it alternatives. That's what people want to achieve. And this is one missing piece of that puzzle. And to make sure that we are able to make this happen for more and more retail investors, which it has so much power now, and you will see that power grow with the entire wealth transfer happening, which is happening now. Like it's happening. The generational wealth transfer will move it into the hands of new, younger, tech savvy investors who want more than just an ETF.
Absolutely. And that is a big trend right now. There's lots going on in the market around succession planning, where fintechs are coming in to enable some of those solutions. And it does make sense, the next generation of investors, obviously, they do want to take care of the wealth that they get, but they do want to explore other things as well, which probably, their ancestors and their parents haven't. So you're kind of opening it up to a whole new generation as well, right? In that way. And Well, how will this product be, obviously it's launched now, but how are you onboarding clients to this new product?
So we built this product because there's an inbound demand, to be honest. Like there were people who were reaching out to us. There were fund managers, hedge funds, some banks who were saying, "Hey, can we white label your product?" And we were not sure. Like I don't know. We're not ready. It's not like it never crossed our minds that we could do this. It's just that we were still early in our journey. But then they reached a point where they're like about 17, 20 enterprise customers willing to license. And actually one of them said, "I'll just pay you the fees. You come up with the fees and tell me, and then you build it for me." So that's almost like the
Oh.
trigger point to say if there is so much demand. And to think that we want to keep the market to ourselves isn't good because to achieve our mission, we want more people to get it. So, yes, we can keep growing and become the size that a TD Bank has, or just empower TD Bank to be able to service everybody who's already captive with them. And the mission said, okay, you empower more people to be able to do this for themselves, and the logical step was to say, hey, can we have an enterprise solution? We were already SOC 2 compliant and FINRA compliant and Securities Commission wise. We were checking off all of those boxes for ourselves already. So we
Right.
were very compliance was our big moat. We were like compliant on a very high level. In US, our lawyers think we overdo it to that extent. Like we don't need to overdo like everything. Even if it's not mandatory, we'd rather do it than otherwise. In terms of encryption, cybersecurity, we were always cutting edge on that front.
Right.
And so it was very easy to extend that to enterprise customers. We started rolling out our product last year. We already have quite a few paying, not I wouldn't call them pilot, they're paying customers who use our funds. Some of them have used to do it small acquisitions and grow their books. Some of them have doubled, tripled, quadrupled their base now that they are enabled with technology. And it's been so I can't tell you how much joy it gives us to say, oh my God, you just added 8,000 investors. So you went from like 100 to 8,000. Because
Yeah.
now you have tech and you can do it. You wouldn't
Right.
do it without the tech, but now you can. And so they're being able to service more. And that's kind of been our journey. And we are seeing a lot of inbound for ourselves.
Wow, that's so amazing. And that's you're right. Like that's gonna create a huge impact, but beyond what you could do just by yourself through your platform. And it seemed like it was an organic next step here. Plus, I don't think you have any competitors in the market at this point. So that's also a great thing to, use this time to actually expand in a big way. So who all could these enterprise clients be? Fund managers, wealth management companies, banks, like who, and probably you have a target segment prioritization there, but who could it be who could work with you on and get onboarded or use Ashta?
Yeah, so let me tell you a little about the product, and then
Yeah.
that will be an obvious progression on who can use it. So because we were a platform and we were end-to-end, in the investment operations language, we built the front office, which is managing the investor. So investor onboarding, KYC, ML, photo ID, their documents, custom reporting, CRM compliance, all of that. So that's managing the investor end of things. So for most of our users, the timelines for that were typically like 7 to 10 business days. Now it's real time. So getting a new investor has moved from 7 days to 5 minutes. So it's real time. It's done. And so that's kind of reduction and savings they are seeing. So that's the front office. Then there's the mid office and back office, which is how do you make sure that the operations work? So if you were managing a few funds, so say you were managing 3 or 5 or 4 funds, or if you were the fund manager, then you are tracking the investor money coming in. or not, as well as the fund-related expenses. So you're doing your calculations, your waterfall estimations, and all of that in an automated manner. You want to generate custom reports? Sure, it's like a one click of a button, and the custom reports for all investors get generated and it gets put on their dashboard. So end to end, it helps anybody managing and playing in the alternative space to grow their top line or the revenues by connecting this fund size to the investor side. And typically, in most organizations, they are disconnected. And the wealth advisors are the intermediaries who try and bridge the gap. Not that their life is any easy, because all of these things sit across a whole bunch of systems.
Yeah.
Here, you have one simple mechanism that connects an investor to a fund. Simple. The typical users from that perspective, what we have currently, there are private credit funds are a very common user because they're trying to grow the investor base. So hedge funds, private credit funds, real estate funds, mortgage funds, we have users in all of these buckets. Lots of hedge fund users, probably because they are often ahead of the curve in technology, I feel. But also banks that are trying to grow their private alternative space, and wealth advisors who play in that space. So who are already investing in alternatives, we're just making their life easier so they can spend the time where they should be rather than doing operational stuff, entering data, re-triggering documents, getting a DocuSign. All of that, sitting in front of the laptop and typing into the stuff, is taken away so they can focus on finding the best outcomes for their customers.
Right. And that sounds pretty interesting, but also I could just imagine that kind of impact it'll make. Because we did see some movement around alternative investments being made available to retail investors from some of the other players, like Wealthsimple also offers private credit and private equity on their platform now. So there's definitely banks are noticing, all the big wealth management companies are noticing, and you are giving them this opportunity, you know, to play in that space and be competitive in that space as well. So I can only imagine the huge amount of, you know, impact that will make, and also the success for you, because as I said, I don't envision, or I don't not envision, but see any or have found any competitor in this space for you, either in US or in Canada at this point. So I feel like you have this white space, and you're ahead of everybody else. So that's pretty amazing. But what's next, Khushbu? I know you just launched Ashta, so probably you have big plans for this, but what's the next frontier for Bri Properly and both Ashta from here?
Well, we'll keep launching products and projects and a whole bunch of things. I mean, Ashta is on a growth and scaling path, both in US and Canada. I think we are in a little bit of a growth mode, and we can barely meet the demand at the moment. And so it's kind of figuring out that demand. And again, like everybody, we constantly keep pushing that resource-constrained boundary to see how we can build our own multi-agent model to scale. When we scale and use more of AI, and more of AI in how we build the tech, more of AI in how we put out content, in every piece of it. But an underlying leveraging AI almost as a sub-organization within the overall system. So that's something we are constantly working and building. And when we are at the right time, we would want to share some of that with our users also. For example, like we recently launched our own agentic AI for support. So in the financial services, you can't give wrong answers to anybody, right? And so on the platform, sometimes there are funds, and the fund documents are pretty robust and very detailed. The only problem is most investors do not have the patience to read it. And even when we bring in the right people to answer those questions, they're like, oh, well, I have to look through it because I can't give you a wrong answer. I have to read, and I know it's in there, but I don't remember now. And so we started leveraging an LLM-based agent to say, hey, Can we just answer the questions from this document on what the document says and stick to it and make life easy for people? Or and then like we now have little systems like this where we are saying, can we do it better without compromising on quality if we leverage AI? So that's the next big frontier that our team is pushing to say, how do we recreate our own jobs to sort of work with AI co-workers?
Kushpo, I feel like there's so much to learn from you, and there's so much value I'm sure the audience is gaining from this, and we could talk all day, but I do want to be mindful of the time as well. But this has been really amazing, and I'm sure, as I said, this been valuable for our audience as well. So much to learn and unpack here, but at least I hope this opened some kind of initial thinking in people who weren't earlier thinking about alternative investments, and also the professionals in the financial services space. If this is something that your organization wants to offer, then Kushbu has a product for you, Ashta Now, and do reach out to her. But Kushbu, thank you for taking the time, being with us, and sharing all the amazing learnings and your story with us. Really a pleasure here.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure being here. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that was Kushbu Jha sharing some amazing insights from the alternative investment world. If you're interested in more such insights, do reach out to Fathom Foresight. We are a knowledge as a service platform specifically focused on the fintech and financial innovation space. So whether you're looking for market intelligence or research as an input into your strategy or your product decisions, we should be happy to help you. So do reach out and subscribe to the channel. We'll see you next time. Take care.
The information provided in this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as financial, investment, or legal advice. The views expressed by the host and guests are their own opinions and do not constitute an endorsement or recommendation. Before making any financial decisions, always consult with a qualified financial advisor or professional who can assess your individual situation and provide personalized advice. Investing involves risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. The Fathom FinTech podcast and its affiliates are not responsible for any financial losses or decisions made based on the content of this episode. Always do your own research before making investment choices.